fear of heights. I looked at Jesse and then back at the 12-foot wall in front of me. I bent double, holding my stomach, and felt as if a hand were wringing the life out of my intestines to the beat of my pounding heart. Waves of nausea waxed and waned as I contemplated the inevitability of climbing up and out of the small crevice within which we had found ourselves. "I can't do it," I said, straightening and shaking my head. I walked a few steps back from where we'd come. "Why not?" Jesse asked, and I couldn't tell if he were being a smartass or if he really wondered. Because I just can't. I wondered how I could explain 50 years of fear of sitting at the top of an 8-foot ladder and crying because I had to climb down from it. 50 years of dreading any downward slope where I might lose my footing and roll uncontrollably and dangerously to end up a broken pile of limbs and torso. 50 years being certain, positive, that I would fall to my death, or at least suffer debilitating injury whenever I faced the most benign climb or descent. "Why not?" he asked again. "Just put one foot here and one here, and I'll help you up and over." He motioned to his thigh set out parallel to the ground as it rested on a small outcropping, and another outcropping, just a bit higher, for what he imagined would be my second foothold. "I can't," I repeated. These were the only words I could come up with. Jesse was irritated, I could tell. "Why not? And what are you going to do? Can you find your way back out of here?" I knew that wasn't possible, and now I, too, was getting angry. "I just can't." I heard the panic and futility in my voice and the nonsensical childishness of my response. I felt trapped. And he was being so insensitive to that thing in me that elicited a deep and primal fear as only a deep-seated phobia can. I looked up at the wall furiously, furious with his insensitivity, furious at the situation he had put us in, furious with myself for being so afraid. Then I grabbed his offered hand and stepped onto the thickness of his thigh. It had been such a great idea, Jesse thought, to explore Rock City Park in rural New York State. And it was. But, as was typical for anything Jesse led us into, we were late to the show. The whole adventure had begun a few days earlier when we'd left the brick and mortar walls of Jesse's apartment, loaded the car with borrowed camping gear scavenged from a dusty outbuilding, and headed into rural western New York. My first camping trip since a one-night fiasco 30 years earlier, I only looked forward to it because it promised to be something new, and I could have Jesse alone for a few days before heading back across the country for the beginning of a new semester teaching in Sioux City. Finding the place had been a challenge. Armed with little preparation other than unspecific directions from his friend John, whom we both knew was a blowhard, we had finally stumbled upon the primitive state park. Leaving the car as the last bits of light fell through the trees and laced the ground around us, we armed ourselves with flashlights and only a vague idea of where we would find the best bits of the hike. We were completely inexperienced at this hiking wilderness thing and had no map, no water, and no gear. In addition to our handheld flashlights, Jesse had brought along the car GPS after entering the car's position. After a few minutes of wandering through trees, buried stones, and colorful toadstools, we found the rocks. Half buried in the earth or jutting up in the night air, covered with crumbly loam and slippery moss, these massive boulders had been pushed down the slopes of now disappeared mountains by the slow, powerful force of an ancient glacier, creating cracks and crevices, shelves, and walls. Navigating around and over them exhilarated and frightened this city girl who'd never spent any time in the wilderness and little time in nature. As I hopped across a number of 1 to 2 foot wide voids slashed in the earth, I imagined my kids' disbelief. While these cracks in the ground would pose no challenge to most hikers or even those out for an evening stroll, my years of imagining falling to a horrible death caused the breath to catch in my throat each time I stepped across one of those narrow, dark chasms. The pride I felt each time I conquered one of these small feats of bravery built and swelled in my chest. I felt uncharacteristically afraid and strong as we wound our way through the natural labyrinth. Jesse, in what I imagine was an attempt to get a rise out of me, wondered aloud whether there were mountain lions or bears about. Not to be easily cowed, I laughed at his speculation. But his next musing found that vulnerable, soft underbelly of my fear. He wondered about spiders and centipedes and what kinds were native to Western New York and what might be lurking just out of sight. I suddenly imagined walking into a hanging black widow, my flashlight catching the notorious red hourglass too late and feeling her silk web catch on my face. That's when we began to look for another way back to the car, finding only a route that included this climb. As I begin to climb up the wall, and looking back, I have to admit that climb might be a little bit of a hyperbole, but life is all about perspective after all, right? My hands shook and my knees wobbled. Each handhold and foothold felt inadequate as I pulled myself up the wall. When I reached the top, I pulled myself over onto the solid ground, and an inexplicable rush of accomplishment, relief, and undeniable joy instantly replaced all that fear and anxiety. The realization of what my body was capable of doing after spending most of my adult life overweight and unfit shocked me. I remember feeling a lightness of being I'd never experienced. The weight of a lifetime of fear and habit fell away like so much dead skin of an onion, curling and crackling at the bottom of a flimsy paper sack. What had begun a year and a half before, the shedding of an old life that included dealing with a 20-year-old marriage that had ended in an amicable divorce and losing 50 pounds of extra flesh I'd accumulated, was now realized in a dark forest in Western New York. The new life I scrambled into when I climbed that first wall looks very little like the years that came before it. But now I've climbed many more walls, scrambled up mountains, and ventured down into canyons all across the Western United States. I've discovered passions and parts of myself I never knew existed. That earlier me, the one once ruled by a fear of heights, now seems eons ago and is as foreign to who I am now as the joy of standing free above the world at the top of a steep and precarious ascent once was. And wonderfully, my joy of scaling heights has morphed into a spiritual one. I've gained the legs and heart to follow not only the path that leads up and over great vistas, but also the path that follows my bliss. When that path becomes frightening, as it sometimes does, I remember, as a talisman, that question my friend Jesse offered up all those years ago. Why not? And I know now there's no good answer.
Dr. Leslie Goss Erickson has been teaching English at Western Iowa Tech Community College for the past 16 years. Over the past 5 summers, she has explored the national parks and wilderness areas out west. With her upcoming early retirement, she looks forward to year-round outdoor adventures and writing about it in her blog, Between a Rock and a Soft Spot. Next Wednesday, Dr. Jim Scott investigates a cold case in a small town.
Well, you know who sawed it down, don't you? She asked. To me, it was the town. Well, you never heard about that? I shook my head. She seemed dumbfounded. She squinted at me.
Ode is a storytelling series where community members tell true stories on stage. It was founded by Allie Carson. The next Ode storytelling event is Wednesday, May 25th at 6:30 p.m. in ISU Design West. To learn more, find Ode Storytelling on Facebook. The music you're hearing is by Annie Owl. You can also find her on Facebook. Find the stories we have broadcast on kwit.org. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Mark Munger.
I want to learn how to pick up the pieces and put you back together. Just like a child and a baby doll, we can put it back together. I'll keep your lovely bones and stick on little wings. I'll only let you go when your heart starts to lose. holding on to hope, 'cause it's